This is the Faherty Podcast presented by Farmers Insurance.
Okay, thank you so much. Thank you. Tonight, I want us to begin with a little creative visualization. Imagine yourself alone on the 18th green on Sunday at Augusta, holding a putter, surrounded by thousands of patrons with glory or goathood in your hands. Now, visualize yourself standing on an empty stage on a Saturday night, just you, your jokes, and a microphone, surrounded by drunken vipers daring you to make them laugh. Comedian Kevin Nealon has an extremely strong comedic constitution because both scenarios would send me running to my gastroenterologist.
But I'm running to meet Kevin Nealon at one of his favourite go-to comedy clubs, the Laugh Factory. I've been looking forward to this.
Kevin, welcome to Faherty. This is, I don't normally do this in the workplace, but that's what this is for you, really.
For me, it is a workplace. Yeah, this is the Laugh Factory in Hollywood. And I work out here, you know, a couple times a month. It's a nice club.
Yeah, there's New York pizza and Chicago pizza. And there's like an argument. Is L.A. comedy and New York comedy, are they two different things?
It's not so much the comedy. I think it's the comics. I think New York creates kind of a brashness to the comic. I remember when I first went to a comedy club, it was a Catch a Rising Star in New York City. And I wanted to feel out this comedy scene because I was interested in getting into it. And I remember going to this club, and it was so packed, and the seats were so close together. Everybody's smoking, and the comics are New Yorkers. You know, it was Richard Belzer was emceeing.
Right,
and,
right.
And I thought, oh, this is just not for me. I'm going to go out to California because I know it's more laid back out there. You know, it's more prop comics and stuff like that, I guess.
Where does this room lie in the spectrum of you know, great comedy rooms and comedy dives?
This is a great room. This is one of the great rooms in L.A. There's several good rooms in L.A. The Improvisation, which is where I started, which is only a few blocks from here. I was a bartender there for a couple of years, and it was great because I got to, you know, watch all the comics go on stage and got to know them a little bit. And if a comic didn't show up, they would put me on.
That must have been terrifying, though.
I was a horrible bartender and a horrible comic. I had people, you know, when I got back from being on stage, they were angry at me in the showroom, and I got back to the bar, and they were angry because they didn't get their drinks. You know, nobody liked me. And then the Comedy Store is great. And my thing was, I always wanted my name on the Comedy Store. You know, because they put your name
on
out
the marquee.
There. I just couldn't get it out there forever. And I was just going by there the other day, and I saw it was on the front.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I've arrived.
That's very cool.
38 years later.
Kevin has had a love affair with laughter ever since he was a boy growing up in Bridgeport, Connecticut. After graduating from Sacred Heart University in 1975, he spent 9 years on stage honing his unique persona as a stand-up comedian before making his network television debut on The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson in 1984. 2 years later, an invitation from Lorne Michaels to join the cast of Saturday Night Live defied his own expectations. He would crack us up for 9 seasons as the anchor of Weekend Update, as Mr. Subliminal, and as France with Hans. Kevin Nealon's on-screen presence is affably quirky. As Don Burns on CBS's Man with a Plan, as Doug Wilson in Showtime's Weeds, and as Gary Potter in Happy Gilmore, which is a perfect segue back to golf.
When did the golf bug bite you?
I don't know if it's bitten me. It's been flying around me, though.
Really?
Maybe
it licked you a couple of times?
It might have licked me, yeah. I was hoping I was a child prodigy, but I don't think I am. When I started getting my own clubs, that's when I think I became more focused on it.
You are pretty good with a putter. I've seen evidence of that.
If golf was just putting, I would be a pro.
Yeah?
Yeah, I'd be a professional. I wouldn't even have a caddy.
Yeah.
I just use one putter and one club, you know.
So few people can say that. Most people hate it.
Oh, I can't wait to get to the green.
Yeah.
If I can't get to the green, man, that's home free for me. When I'm on the green, look out. Okay, all that those 5 strokes back there, I'm making up for it now.
What's your best round?
Hasn't happened yet. Hasn't happened.
You still waiting for it?
I'm waiting for it. That's why I keep going back to play.
Well, you've got some friends out there in the PGA Tour, like Charlie Hoffman and John Daly. Must have given you tips. What are they telling you?
John Daly? Well, he had the best advice that I still use to this day. He said that a lot of times when you're an amateur, or even if you're tired, like on the back nine, you know, take an extra club length or two, because you can't hit it as far as you could, you know, a couple of years ago, or even at the beginning of the game.
Well, that's good advice for any amateur golfer. You know, my old teacher used to say, club up and duff. You know, take plenty of club and hit it badly. It should work.
Well, he said, you know, a sign of an amateur is they always leave it short.
Yeah.
For Charlie Hoffman, I said, I was having trouble getting out of the bunker that day. I said, Charlie, what am I doing wrong? He goes, just try to hit the ball with the hosel of the club. I said, okay, I'll try that. And I said, but Charlie, if I try to hit with the hosel, I'm going to hit it with the hosel. He goes, no, you won't. I said, okay. So he was standing on the lip of the bunker, and I, you know, swung. And I hit the ball. It shanked out. I think I hit it with the hosel. I said, Charlie, what happened? He goes, I don't know. And he left. He walked away.
Well, in 1986, you joined it's the elite of comedy, the SNL cast, and you were there for 9 seasons?
A lot of people ask me how I got on Saturday Night Live.
Right.
Although they phrase it more like this. How did you get on Saturday Night Live? Well, I was friends with Dana Carvey at the time.
Right.
And that summer, he was selected to be on SNL for that coming fall. And then he calls me one day. He goes, Kev, I'm at a Lorne Michaels house in Long Island. Guess who's in the kitchen? Bill Murray and Dan Aykroyd. I said, you're kidding me. He goes, no. Anyway, Lorne Michaels is looking for one more cast member. I told him about you, and I think he's going to want to see your tapes. I said, Bill Murray and Dan Aykroyd are in the kitchen? He goes, yeah, I got to go. Somebody's coming. I wasn't even thinking about being on that show.
Right.
Even when he said it, I wasn't hearing it. So the next thing you know, I'm flying into New York for an audition. For me, it's just a free trip to New York. I know I'll never get it.
Mm.
So I go, I do my little audition thing at Studio 8H, 30 Rock, and 2 weeks later, I'm sitting in front of Lorne Michaels at a high-rise in Beverly Hills. She's offering me a job on SNL. I said, let me think about it over the weekend. That's the way I roll. That's how I get places. How do you think I got on your show? I got to this point.
It was taking me 2 years to get you.
And he goes, well, you think about it over the weekend. We'll see you in New York on Monday. He saw right through it. So the next thing I know, I'm out at Lorne Michaels' house in Long Island. I got a call from Dana Carvey. He goes, Kev, I'm in the back bedroom. Guess who's in the kitchen? I said, I'm in the kitchen now, tough guy. I'm in the kitchen.
You were on my favorite part, I think, of SNL on the weekend update.
Yeah.
Has that changed throughout the years?
It changes with every weekend update anchor.
Yeah.
You know, they bring a different personality to it. I like doing the dry newsman, like Chevy Chase used to do, because I kind of, you know, grew up watching him.
And our final story, the Walt Disney Company closed a deal this week to renovate a 42nd Street movie house in the heart of seediest Times Square. In honor of the move, local hookers have asked to be greeted, hi-ho, hi-ho. I'm Kevin Nealon, and that's news to me.
Is it a hard show to keep your face straight?
I cracked up once with Chevy Chase on Weekend Update because he couldn't read the lines. And then one time Chris Farley got caught. He was supposed to swing out over the audience from Weekend Update desk on a cable. And as he went back, he got caught on the lettering.
Oh.
A Weekend Update, and they couldn't unhinge him.
Oh.
And I unhinged him eventually, but it was funny watching him kind of vamp and trying to get out of that whole thing.
So clearly, I was an athletic prodigy growing up. What about you?
Probably just like you.
Really?
We played Sandlot football. Never played on a team.
Right.
But we played Sandlot, like, in our neighborhood. We played the gang from across the town.
What position were you?
I was a quarterback.
Oh, really?
Yeah. We didn't have referees or anything, so it was a really brutal game. We had equipment and all that, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And so my friend goes, hey, Kev, we could go to Fairfield University. We could take a night course, and that'll qualify you for us to play on their football team. I said, let's do it. So we both took a course in criminology. We went maybe 3 times.
I got to ask, why criminology?
Because it seemed the easiest.
Okay.
Yeah. And so we ended up on the football team there, and their starting quarterback got hurt. So I got to play quarterback for almost the whole season. I got nominated MVP, and and we had a great time. You know, it was my fantasy. I got to play football, so that was pretty much my. I played Little League and stuff, but golf. I started caddying like a lot of golfers when I was about 14 or 15 in Connecticut, and I used my mother's clubs and my brother used my father's clubs, and never took that many lessons, and kind of got more into it as I got older.
Yeah, there's a lot of actors and musicians that come to golf late. It seems, is there a therapeutic aspect to it?
Yes, I think there is. I think a lot of people are trying to kick some kind of a bad habit.
Yes.
So they're replacing that habit with golf.
Yeah.
And I had no bad habits to replace it with. That's why I'm not that good. John Daly is great fun to golf with.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, we were in Palm Springs. And my son was newborn at the time. And I was pushing him around in the stroller at the condo where I was staying because I had a tee time like at 10 o'clock. And then I realized my watch stopped. It's already like 5 after 10. I missed my tee time. You know, so I put the baby away, I rushed over there, and I caught up to them on the first green. And I said, John, I'm so sorry, man. I was out last night, and I got hammered. And I so hung over this morning. I'm so sorry. He goes, that's all right. Don't worry about it.
Kevin had a 9-year run pumping up and lampooning the news on SNL. But making all that possible years earlier was one unforgettable night in Burbank, California, that began with the most famous intro in late-night comedy history. Here's Johnny.
NBC's Tonight Show debuted with Steve Allen as the host in 1954, followed by Jack Paar in 1957. No golf relation that I know of. Then in 1962, Johnny Carson began a 30-year run on The Tonight Show that showcased America's biggest stars and talented newcomers like Kevin Nealon.
So how do you end up on The Johnny Carson Show?
When you first start out doing stand-up, you are emulating somebody that you admire, like a golfer would, you know.
Yeah.
Until you eventually develop your own style.
Yeah.
And then you get an act, and then you hone it, and then eventually you get on the talk shows, like The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, which was my dream.
Yeah.
And I remember I was so nervous. My mouth was so dry. And they passed me, like, on that Friday to do it on Monday. And everybody I talked to, you'd think I was listening to them, but I was really in my head going over my act. I was nodding to them, but going over my act. And that day, when the curtains open up, they announce Johnny Carson, here he is, Kevin Nealon, you know, and I come out there, and the audience is applauding, Johnny's there. I totally blanked. I couldn't remember my act.
Oh, wow.
I couldn't remember my act. And the audience, the last clap happens, and I happen to remember my act. And I was doing my material, and they were laughing and applauding, and I hear Johnny laughing. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm doing the Tonight Show, because I knew my act so well now, you know. Yeah. I have another conversation going on. This is going great.
Yeah.
So I come back through the curtain afterwards, and they say, Johnny wants you to come over to the couch and talk to you. Nothing has ever superseded that before, you know, the Saturday Night Live or Weeds or any of those shows.
Yeah.
Anything in my life. I mean, except personal things like marriage and sure. babies and things. But that, career-wise, was like my biggest natural high ever.
Adam Sandler is a good pal of yours. You were in
Sandler, yeah.
Happy
yeah.
Gilmore with him.
Happy Gilmore. We had a lot of fun shooting that up in British Columbia. Golf movies are really hard to do.
Oh, yeah.
To make them stick. You know, Caddyshack yeah. was tough to beat that. I mean, that was the first one that really stuck. And then Happy Gilmore, I think, is right up there with Caddyshack. And people love it. They quote my lines, you know. Feel the flow, harness the good, block the bad.
It's yeah, circular. Where did that character come from?
That was just a character that we kind of improvised on the green when we were shooting that scene. I was supposed to be his guru, you know, kind of,
yeah.
you know, his feel-good guru and give him confidence. And so we just kind of played around with it, and it kind of just evolved into that. Then we realized he's a psycho.
Yeah. You end up playing golf with Arnold Palmer.
I did this blood thinner commercial with Arnold Palmer, which was a treat. I mean, just to hang out with him in his clubhouse and ordering an Arnold Palmer and in the warehouse where all his clubs are, the Wilson clubs where he won his first open. And such a nice guy, too. And this guy has done everything.
Yeah.
You know, what a full life. And I was trying to impress him, you know.
As one does.
Yeah. And I said, hey, Ernie, you know, I golfed at the Ocean Course in South Carolina. He goes, oh, yeah, I designed that course. I won 3 opens down there. I said, I bet you did. I bet you did. You're Arnold Palmer, right? That doesn't surprise me. And then a couple minutes later, we're talking about Hawaii. I said, you know, Arnie, I golfed a really nice course on the island of Lanai. He goes, I designed that course, too. I won 2 opens out there. I said, I couldn't stump him. Like, he's done everything. Yeah. And finally, I tried to stump him. I said, hey, Arnie, you know that miniature golf course on the freeway by Long Beach? He goes, I designed the windmill for that. No. But, you know, I just wanted to know about him because he had done so much. I mean, what do you like besides golf? I was trying to figure that out in my head. Like, what do golfers do besides golf? Because that seems to take up a lot of their life. He said, well, I said, like, what did you watch on TV growing up? He goes, oh, I love Westerns. I said, me too. I love The Rifleman, I said, Chuck Connors. He goes, Chuck Connors gave me his rifle. I thought, oh, my God, this guy just won't stop.
Yeah.
But he was such a nice guy. My mother came to the set to visit, and I introduced my mother to Arnold Palmer. He goes, oh, I know your mother. Hey, Kathleen. What hasn't this guy done is what I'm saying.
All right, Kevin, this is rapid fire.
I love rapid fire.
Of course. I mean, who couldn't? Somebody start a clock somewhere. What's your favorite color?
Plaid.
God. Favorite food?
Wild salmon. But it's got to be bear caught. It's got to be caught by a bear.
Bear. Favorite expletive?
Fach Manave. It's one I made up.
Favorite music?
Rock.
Favorite team, college or pro?
The Blues. Also my second favorite color.
Favorite PGA Tour golfer?
Spieth.
Favorite foursome?
Spieth, Mickelson, Tiger, Rory McIlroy.
That's 5, including you.
Oh, I'm in it.
Never mind. Tofu or steak?
Tofu, but it's gotta be bear caught.
When you see a tennis ball on the ground, do you think tennis or dog?
Dog. Playing tennis.
I got that from your Twitter page.
I thought that sounded familiar.
Excellent question. And that is rapid fire with Kevin Nealon. As always, he wins nothing.
Ah, boo.
How hard is it to rise to the top in comedy these days? It seems like there's more and more comedians with serious radio.
It's so easy. It's so easy, David. It's so easy. I don't even know if there is a top. You know, there's comics out there that have filled stadiums before, and now, you know, they're working in clubs like this. So it's hard to, once you get to the top, it's hard to stay there. You're always kind of like discovering new things. It's like with golf. How can they keep making these new golf magazines every month or week, however they come out, you know?
Spinoffs and
there's new lessons, there's new, you know, equipment.
Yeah, and there's never anything new when it boils down to it.
Yeah, yeah.
So they're still, you know, they're teaching golf pretty much the same way as they used to.
Yeah.
You know, it might be faster or, you know, lighter, whatever, but you still got to, you know, make a swing. It's never ceases to amaze me.
I think the biggest kind of trap for people is putters. People are always buying new putters. Yeah. All you have to do is, like, say, this is a new veteran putter. You know, people go, I'll try that one, you know?
Exactly. And the thing is, when you get used to one, that's when it stops working.
Yeah, really,
as soon as you think you got the answer, somebody changes the question. That's the thing with golf.
I've had the same putter for a long time, but I've instead of getting a new one, I got a thicker handle.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
So it's kind of like a log on the end of it.
Yeah, those things feel weird.
Like this.
Did you always know that comedy was going to be in your future?
I really wanted to be a musician. I wanted to be like a singer-songwriter.
Yeah.
Because I grew up in that coffee house era where I loved going to the coffee houses. I loved, you know, bands like Crosby, Stills and Nash and James Taylor, you know, the acoustic stuff. And I was in garage bands growing up. But to sing on stage, it seemed so intimate to me. You know, and comedy came easier to me. I used to memorize the jokes in the back of the Parade magazine paper.
Yeah.
And they had my favorite jokes by different, you know, current comics at the time. And I would memorize those jokes, and I'd go to a party and tell those jokes. I'd make them like it happened to me. You know, hey,
right.
Did you hear about the guy who stole a fire truck downtown today? This guy stole a fire truck. Can you believe that? And I'm looking around, and they're believing me. They go, you're kidding me. What happened? Well, he was arrested 2 hours later by some guy who stole a cop car. Ah, you got me.
It's really hard for a comic. I'm kind of a keen amateur at it. And I find when I'm bombing, the ability to be able to dig yourself out, I think, is what makes a great comic.
I like the whole idea of digging yourself out. You know, when I've been doing it for a long time, and I'm really good at it. No, but I kind of like putting myself in that underdog position sometimes, because I know the jokes get laughs. So, and it kind of, it challenges me to start off by digging a hole. And what I'll do, I've only been doing this for 2 weeks now, I'll get on stage and I'll say, I think you're gonna be surprised at just how funny I am tonight. You know, because this is what I do, I'm a professional, and I'm really, really good at it, you know?
Yeah, that's a hole.
And I say, it's like when I play ping pong with somebody. I let them get the first 10 points, I pretend I'm losing,
right.
But then I try to come back, you know, and there's just a few points left. And
yeah.
So it's been a challenge. I may not do that anymore.
The whole political correctness movement, if you like, seems to me it could be the death of comedy.
I typically don't offend people in my act, but I'm the kind of guy, because my presentation is more naive,
right.
Innocent, I can get away with some things.
Yeah.
As opposed to someone that's got a little more hard edge to them, that's more of a ranting comic. You know, whether it's a Bill Burr or even like a Dave Chappelle, not that he's a ranter, but people expect that from them. But, you know, if I come up with a new bit that maybe is offensive, you know, people will walk out. You know, if you don't find it's funny, that's fine. You know, look at all the other people laughing.
Well, you know, I always think that, you know, I understand if you don't think it's funny, but I mean, I require people to understand that it's a joke.
Yeah. I had two people walk out on me in San Francisco a couple weekends ago, and that's never happened before. But everybody else loved it.
Yeah.
And it's one of those jokes that I ran by my publicist and my manager.
Uh-huh.
You think I should do this? I mean, you know, it seems like a little edgy, especially for me, because
yes.
I'm not the kind of guy that does that kind of jokes, but I'm ready to make a move. You know, it's like Sunday for me in the golf course. I got to make my move, man. I'm not getting any younger. I got to make my mark here. I got to be different. And, you know, something that people are talking about. But
no,
I'm tired of playing it safe.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
I'm going to get out my 7-iron. What if we just started talking in golf analogies?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, just hit 3 or 4 out of bounds.
I'm going to hit my driver off the fairway. I don't care. It's time, man. I need the distance.
More Faherty will continue after a few words from our sponsor.
Why is Farmer supporting my show? Well, I've interviewed over 100 guests, ranging from legendary golfers to presidents to celebrities. And just like Farmers is smarter from their unbelievable but true experiences, from each of my interviews, I've gained great knowledge that I can carry forward. Well, from most of them. Anyway, thank you, farmers, for supporting my show.
We are farmers. Bum, 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 bum.
All right, then. Now back to the show. How long have you been playing in the up at Tahoe in the American Century?
I've been playing about 13 years in the American Century Championship. And they usually team me with Barkley, Charles Barkley.
Oh, I mean, what a sweet human being.
Yeah, and I mean, it's such a great group of athletes. I mean, it's all like Tony Romo and Aaron Rodgers, and, you know, professional, like hockey players, baseball, all of us athlete types is what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
and because I'm, you know, I haven't refined my skills yet for golf, they team me up usually with Charles Barkley.
Well, that would help.
Yeah. And I remember the first time I golfed with him was on the green, first green, and somebody heckles him from the stands. And Barkley looks up there, he picks up the ball from the green, and he goes, "I'll hit you with this." And the heckler yells back, "Not if you aim." I thought, this is going to be a long day.
Oh, boy.
It's going to be a long day. But I did hit one woman in the head with a ball.
You did?
Yeah, I sliced it on one of the fairways, and it went toward the beach where everybody was watching, the gallery. And I yelled four as loud as I could. And because I knew it was, we were on camera, and if mm-hmm. we went to court, I could say, "Let's look at the tape." I yelled four.
Yeah.
And everybody covered up except for one lady. And wouldn't you know, my ball hit her right in the forehead.
It's a sickening feeling.
Oh, from 200 yards away, I heard that whole gallery in the distance, kind of like slightly hear them. Like they're, "Oh no!" The ball bounced off her forehead and went through the sand up onto the green about this close to the hole. And I heard that same gallery in the distance go, "Nice, nice." But I was worried about that lady.
There was a little Arnold thumb there.
A little Arnold thumb, yeah.
Yeah, everybody got the Arnold.
I ran all the way to that lady, like 200 yards. I said, "Are you okay? Are you okay?" She goes, "Yes, but you better put me on the Today Show." I thought I hit her really hard.
It's a hard game. You know, if you think about Sir Charles, someone who has so much skill.
Well, you know, everybody knows Charles has that hitch in the swing. When he goes back, he stops like a foot from the, and I've seen this swing a zillion times. And every year I go back there, I used to think, well, maybe he's got rid of that hitch.
Yeah.
But he never does. And he's worked with Haney and everybody. They blindfolded him. You know, they tried to hypnotize him.
No, they need to taser him.
But that's for other things.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But when he's on the driving range, he hits it fine.
I know.
But he said he has a fear of hitting somebody.
Right.
I said, "I'm the guy that hits people."
Wouldn't you love to see him get rid of that hitch, really, and be able to?
No.
No?
Because then I couldn't beat him.
Oh, that was my next question. I mean, do you beat him?
Yeah, yeah.
You do?
Oh, yeah, it's a piece of cake.
Right. I played with Telly Savalas one year in the European version of the Bob Hope, and he hit 11 people in 9 holes and drank a bottle of Courvoisier.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I mean, you've got targets on a few others as well. What about Romano and James?
Romano and James probably play a little bit better than me, but I think they could be had if I put the time into it. Because, again, hand-eye coordination.
According to your 23andMe profile, you're 89.1% Irish.
23andMe, I thought that was a dating site at first. I can imagine my disappointment.
Yeah, really?
They go way back. Like, I have, like, from way, like, even part of Africa.
I don't know how they can tell that from a vial of snot.
It's not snot, it's saliva.
Oh.
Yeah, you spit in there, and then you seal it up, and you send it in. Somehow they can tell. Maybe they have a guy that tastes it or something. Puts a tongue. A little spicy, maybe Irish, you know, maybe Spanish.
Now, I'm led to believe that you and your wife, Susan, have a list of celebrities that you're allowed to sleep with.
Well, it's not a list, but we have something called a hall pass.
Right.
We could be with one celebrity for one night, no questions asked.
Okay.
But I realize that you have to update that list. You can't just write somebody's name down, stick it in the drawer, and pull it out 10 years later and think everything's cool.
Why is that?
Well, because things change. People change. Like, I looked at mine the other day, Mary Tyler Moore. She passed away a couple years ago.
Yes, that wouldn't be right.
She was a great woman. My wife's Bruce Jenner.
That would be awkward. Yeah.
I knew Bruce Jenner for a long time.
You did?
But I only met Caitlyn Jenner 4 months ago.
Yeah.
And somehow, she knew me.
Really?
Yeah.
What are the odds?
In 2008, at the age of 54, Kevin wrote a book entitled, "Yes, You're Pregnant, But What About Me?" For men who find themselves in similar circumstances, the book is a revelation.
I had a book deal, and I thought, since I'm journaling so much about my wife being pregnant, why don't I write a book about my wife being pregnant, what it's like for me to go through a pregnancy? What about me?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the difficulty I have going through. So I started writing about it. But then when you start writing about having a baby, you start thinking about your own childhood. So it became more of a memoir. And it became more than that. It became, you know, like Saturday Night Live years and stand-up comedy and things like that.
When you wrote the book, did you start writing the book knowing what the end was going to be, or was it just a sort of a process?
It was a process. But so many things were unfolding every day. Going through this, as you know, it's pretty intense. Like, I came home one night. It was during the time of one of the American Century championships in Lake Tahoe. She goes, you know what, I can't really go because the altitude is almost 5,000 feet and you're not supposed to be over 5,000 feet when you're pregnant. I don't know if that was true or not, but insensitively I said, well, Tahoe's just about 5,000 feet. Couldn't you just crouch for the whole week? She didn't like that.
Oh, the hazards of being a comic?
Yeah.
How are you enjoying being a dad at, what, 64?
64.
You have an 11-year-old boy, Gable?
That's right. Yeah. It's great. Because I know so much, more than he knows, and I'm able to teach
him. But that's the truth. The older you get, the more you know. I try to explain that to my children. You know, when I thought I was a genius when I was 18, when I was 25, I realized that I wasn't when I was 18, and it never changes.
My son, I came into his bedroom the other day. It looked really sad. And I said, what's the matter, buddy? Because I don't know his name. I'm never home.
Right.
He goes, I've just been thinking. I'm 11 now, and you're 64. You know, when I'm 22, you're going to be 74. When I'm 32, you're going to be 84. You're not going to be around for a lot of my life, are you?
Well, he's not going to pass math either.
No, I don't know what it was. 20, was that all right?
I think you're adding 10 when he's 11.
I said, no, but I'm going to be around a long time. Yeah. I'm going to be around a long time. And
you're going to have to look after me.
You're going to have to be changing my diapers. Because now there's kids in my class and you know, their parents are in their 30s and their mid-30s, late-30s, and you're 64. I said, that doesn't mean anything. Who's to say they're not going to die in a fiery car crash tomorrow? You know, or murder-suicide. You don't know that. And who says you're going to outlive me?
Yeah.
There's no guarantee.
Yeah.
Some murdering clown could come into your bedroom tonight and smother you with a balloon animal. You don't know that. Anyway, I just, you know, I give him a kiss on the forehead. I said, you get a good night's sleep. We'll talk about this in the morning.
I've read that you've got an interest in card games. Is it for fun, or is there a little gambling involved?
I used to play Texas Hold'em, but that was more of a charity thing in Las Vegas. And I never really played that much, so I had to ask my dentist, who was a poker player, what beats what? And she wrote me out a whole list, and I kept it under the table when I played, and I happened to win the tournament, like $100,000 to give to a charity. So people think I'm like a real good poker player.
Meanwhile, you had the...
I had the cheat sheet down here. But poker is really all about attitude and, you know, facial expression.
Tell me about growing up in the Nealon house.
They were my family.
Yes.
And it was a house of great encouragement and support. There was no swearing. Never heard any swearing. I never heard my parents argue. It was
Are you sure you're Irish?
I may not be, now that you think about it. Now that I think about it. But, you know, we did actually go back to find our ancestors' house in Ireland, which is in County Clare. Mm-hmm. And it's in a little town, believe it or not, I'm not kidding, it's called Feakle, Ireland.
I know the place. Yeah, I do.
It's spelled differently, but it smells the same.
It's like F-E-A-G-H-E-L or something?
No, it's F-E-A-K-L-E, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just two letters switched back and forth. But I have two brothers and I have two sisters. I'm right in the middle.
Yeah.
And we all get along great. I'm probably the funniest out of all of them. Although people say my brother's funnier than me.
Yeah.
But that's the wine. He'll have a couple glasses of wine.
Yeah.
And he hasn't really refined the comedy like I have, and he hasn't been able to market it.
Right.
You know, it's like what good is a diamond mine if you don't go in there and mine it and take it out?
Now, on Twitter, you posted a picture of your dad, Emmett Nealon, wearing a lady's hat, and you wrote, only because there wasn't a lampshade. Thanks, Dad, for teaching me to take comedy risks. So tell me a little bit about your dad. It sounds like it might have been a hoot.
He kind of gave me the security to be funny, because he would laugh at everything.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a great laugh. He would laugh like this. But the way he ended it was great. He goes, is that right? It was always ended, is that right? Yeah, that was right. But he's a smart guy, engineer. Everything was level in our house, you know, pictures, floor, everything. And always building airplanes. He was an aeronautical engineer. So I grew up, you know, smelling airplane glue for most of my life. And just a real charmer, a real gentleman. When my father died, I was surprised that the world didn't stop. Mm. You know, because I thought, why are people still going to work and, you know, getting in line and teeing off and, you know, going online dating and all that stuff, you know? I thought the world would stop. After a while, I realized maybe the world did stop, but he fixed it really quick. And nobody noticed.
Oh, wow.
But he was a great guy. He was a great guy. And when I golf in Lake Tahoe at the American Century thing, I have like a little fan group that follows me around. It's, a friend of mine started this T-shirt thing where every year it's a different logo on the back of the shirt. Like, because at the altitude, it's 5,000 feet. One year it was like altitude versus attitude. You know, another year it was get there, now bite. You know. So this year it's a tribute to my father, my father's picture on the back of the shirt. And he's holding the golf ball. And he's got a green Irish hat on, and it's the show I'm on, Man with a Plan, above him.
Yeah.
Man with a Plan, under that is Don't Finish Last.
Right.
And then his name.
I thought you were going to go, is that right?
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, I adore my mom, and I know you love yours too, because you wrote this tweet to her on her birthday. Happy 90th birthday to my always youthful mom. You're everything we could have dreamed. Congratulations. So, I mean, that's quite an endorsement for mom.
Yeah, yeah, she makes a lot of money from me.
She does?
And endorsements, yeah. She always looks on the bright side of things. Like when we had a lot of fires out here.
Yeah.
In Los Angeles, she, you know, I say, Mom, there's like so much smoke in the sky and stuff. She goes, oh, that's horrible. Well, at least the sunsets are better, right? Because of the filter of the smoke. I say, yeah, yeah, you're right about that, I guess, yeah. Always made us the best lunches, you know, for school. Other kids next to me, they'd have like peanut butter and jelly, you know, Oreo cookies.
Yeah.
I would have like a homemade egg salad, lettuce and tomato,
oh,
fresh bread, homemade baked chocolate chip cookies. And kids would just look at me like, where did you get that? Where's that coming from? You know, I said, it's my mother.
Yeah.
Or I'd come home at night and there'd be fresh baked brownies, you know, you could smell in the house, and she'd iron her clothes and type our term papers.
Yeah.
Like, perfect. I have no reason to complain about anything.
Well, I think you're an excellent role model. And thank you for joining me here today.
Thank you for having me.
It's been a hoot, Kevin. Thank you. Since his first appearance on The Tonight Show back in 1984, one thing is crystal clear. Kevin Nealon loves making people laugh, especially the tough crowds where judgments about good, bad, right, wrong, and funny have become alarmingly divisive. But Kevin has a way of finding the sweet spot in our collective outrage, and in his new self-produced show, Hiking with Kevin, he and his guests laugh and get some exercise too. Thanks for coming along with me today, Kevin, and thanks for the hike. I'm trying to drop a few pounds. Well, that's our show for tonight. Keep up with me on Facebook, Instagram, at FeherTwit, and the Yoga Pants section at Lululemon. Good night, sweetie. Good night, everyone. Thanks for joining me, Feherty fans. You can find more of the Feherty podcast presented by Farmers Insurance on Feherty.com and your favorite podcast provider. Go to Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Art19, or Google Play. Search Feherty and subscribe. If you love the show, and why wouldn't you? Be sure to leave a rating, review, and tell your friends.